Let's go. Friday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
This week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, 50 years of Saturday Night Live. We'll talk about the legendary producer Lorne Michaels and much more. Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Coming up, we'll get the latest news from the Times Union, including convicted January 6th insurrectionists from our region. They got pardoned. A ban on transgender people participating in public sports in Nassau County gets upheld in court, and plans to develop the Neverly Resort for a new era stay on track despite two major fires in 1 year. Lana Bellamy of the Times Union is going to join me for those stories in just a few minutes. But first, a quick notice for Village of Liberty residents and customers of Village of Liberty Water. There is a boil water notice in effect in place. Village of Liberty Water Department says that due to a water main break in the village, residents are advised to boil any water for drinking or food preparation until further notice. And our next story is a notice for students in New York State. Your days of using your smartphone at school could be numbered. Governor Kathy Hochul's proposed cell phone ban is getting more support from parents and teachers and also seems to be getting a warm reception from lawmakers in Albany. Governor Hochul wants to prohibit students from using internet-enabled phones, watches, and tablets during school hours, and she wants to do it soon. She included the proposed ban in her $252 billion state budget proposal Tuesday. If approved, it would take effect just in time for the 2025-2026 school year. So far, the state's legislative leaders, who will spend the next 2 months negotiating with the governor on a final budget, they seem to be open to the idea. Governor Hochul's proposed school cell phone ban already has support from teachers, law enforcement, and even the state PTA. WNYC's John Campbell reports they all joined the governor at a suburban Albany school yesterday.
The governor packed a classroom with supporters at a middle school in the capital region town of Guilderland. Hochul says if New York enacts a statewide ban, other states will follow.
I guarantee that the rest of the country will be watching what we do here, and I feel so confident, having taken the time for many months to have the conversations with all the stakeholders involved, that we have a policy that'll work.
California already passed a law limiting smartphones in schools, though it doesn't take effect until 2026. Hochul's proposal would take effect in August. It would be up to the school districts to decide how to enforce the ban. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
And you can see John Campbell's full article. It's up right now with way more details at our website, wjffradio.org. Right now, let's go over the latest news from the Times Union. For that, joining us from the Times Union, it's Lana Bellamy. Lana, welcome to the local edition.
Thank you. It's always good to be here.
So since the last time we checked in with the Times Union, we got a whole new president. We had a whole new administration coming in, and what seems to be a whole new interpretation or even legal take on the impact of January 6th, the insurrection, when the people violently tried to keep somebody in the highest elected office of the land against the will of the American electorate. So you've got some news about some folks that were participants in January 6th from the Hudson Valley. Is that right?
Yes. We have been following the cases of a couple of people who were charged, convicted of, violence at the Capitol. And, you know, one of Trump's first things that he did once he took office was issue this sweeping executive order that clears them, whether they're awaiting trial still or in jail. So we have an update here on a couple of people from the Hudson Valley. We haven't covered every single person who may have come from the region, but there are a couple of high-profile names, that, including one who was actually named in the order. He was one of the 14 people whose sentences were commuted, and that was Roberto Menuda, a Newburgh Free Academy graduate who ran a local tattoo shop in Newburgh. and then he moved to Texas a little bit later. He was one of the oath keepers who was sentenced in 2023 for seditious conspiracy, which is one of the most serious charges. He had been sentenced to 4.5 years in prison and 3 years of post-supervision release.
Do you know why he was one of the ones that were mentioned? What makes that particular case something where, you know, because we're talking about, you know, hundreds, even thousands of individuals that this affects. But here's a name that the new president has on his lips and at the end of his pen. What makes that case notable?
I think it's notable mostly because of the role that he's said to have played in sort of planning what happened at the Capitol, especially with this group, the Oath Keepers. He was said to have played a pretty significant role in helping to orchestrate what went down and storing some weapons at a hotel near the Capitol. So I think that his case has gotten a lot of attention. And so that might be one of the reasons why it was also high up on President Trump's list.
Wow, I guess I was kind of falsely hoping that you might tell me, like, oh, well, here's somebody that really didn't do anything that bad, and the president feels like his sentence is way out of whack. Now, here's somebody that, like, helped plan this violent attack, this seditious act, and now they've been set free.
Yes.
Wow, okay. And there were some other folks of notable cases from the Hudson Valley?
There were. The two next ones have gotten a lot of attention as well. One was Edward Jacob Lange. He's a Sullivan County native, but he was arrested when he was in Newburgh shortly after what happened. And he was accused of fighting at the Capitol for nearly 2.5 hours with law enforcement who were defending the Capitol's entrance. And he is someone who hadn't been convicted yet. He had been awaiting trial, but he had sought multiple delays. And based on some other local reporting, it seems that he was trying to wait to see if President Trump would issue a pardon once he got into office that would, you know, dismiss his case, which was the case here. And then another person is William Joseph Pepe, who is a Beacon resident, and he worked for the Metropolitan Transportation Authority. And he is said to have led the Hudson Valley chapter of the Proud Boys down to the Capitol, and he was convicted last year of obstructing or interfering with law enforcement during a civil disorder, which was a felony, and then some misdemeanor charges as well.
Lana, are these cases that you've been following along, or are you just getting into this now? I'm just curious, like, how aware you are of some of these stories.
I'm fairly aware. I haven't been covering them, you know, every single day, but I've been checking in on them as there's been developments. I remember when Edward Jacob Lange, who goes by Jake, was arrested, and Roberto Menuda from my history of covering stories at the Times Herald Record, because those were a little bit more local to where I was.
Right. And so now, do you have any idea of how these folks are feeling about this news, how their families are feeling?
I don't, unfortunately. I haven't really been able to get in touch with their families. I'm sure they're a bit relieved. I don't really want to speak for them,
right, though. Right. And are you going to try to talk to any of these folks once they're back home, if any of them do come back to this area?
I would like to, yes, just to see how they're doing, you know, and what they've thought of how their cases have gone, how they feel now that the president has cleared them.
Right. All right. Well, thank you for that update. It overlaps with a lot of news that we're following right now, especially at the national level. Next story up, there was a fire at the Nevely. You know, when I heard that, I'm like, didn't the Nevely already burn? You know, there's been multiple fires there. And you've got a story about those fires and plans for doing something with the Nevely.
Yes, actually, this is a story that we published this morning. And I wrote most of it yesterday. So there has been an outbreak of fires recently. Two fires happened within days of each other this month. And then also since this month, there was also one in March of last year. Now, we know that some of these former resort sites can, you know, be vulnerable to fires. There's a lot of people who trespass, a lot of people who want to go on the property for one reason or the other. But I did speak with the Ulster County Fire Coordinator, who is investigating the recent fires at the Neveley, and he did tell me that it was unusual. He doesn't really remember something like this happening before the March 2024 fire, but he wouldn't say if it was criminal in nature or not because they're still under investigation.
They're still investigating the March fire?
Yes.
Wow.
I was a bit surprised about that too, but he said the decision, the determination hasn't been finalized were the words that he used. So Maybe we'll know soon.
Okay. But yet, despite all of this burnination happening at the Neveley, you've got, they're still developing it. That's the big news to me.
Yes. So I spoke with the developer, Keith Rubenstein, and he told me that it is a bit of a snag for him because he's planning to demolish all of the buildings that are on the site and build new. And it's a more than $300 million project is what he estimated to me. And so he said that the fires could add to their cost for demolition because they might have to account for abatement of whatever may have caused the fires, if it's certain liquids or what have you, and then also whatever may have burned in the fires. But other than that, he's still planning to move along with plans to create a lot of housing, private single-family homes, boutique hotels, spa, restaurants, sports facilities at the site. And he even told me that a recent state approval from the DEC is going to help them now finally move forward after years of pre-planning. So his next steps are finding a hotel partner, and then that might take a year and a half, is what he said, and then they'll move on to construction, which he estimated would take about 2 years. And all in all, to me, that didn't sound like that finishing the project was that far off.
Yeah, 2 years isn't that far away for something that big at a place that has had two major fires in the last year. I'm curious about this developer. Do you know much about them? Have they done any projects like this elsewhere?
Well, I did just meet him over the phone, but he's a founding partner at a real estate investment firm in New York City called Somerset Partners, and they have worked on projects across the country. This project is personal to Keith. He told me that he spent summers growing up, going on vacations with his family to the Neveley, and he learned to play, you know, tennis and golf and ice skate and skiing there. And he remembered the old safari lounge, watching playoff games and meeting, you know, a famous Mets pitcher. So his memories are going to, or he said that they have shaped his vision for what he hopes the Neveley will turn into under his redevelopment. So, yeah.
It's interesting how often when people start doing something in the Catskills, especially this area of the Catskills, you know, the former Borscht Belt, whether it's something as big as rehabilitating one of these former resorts or a number of years ago, the International All Tomorrow's Parties Music Festival, you know, made its home at Kutcher's for a few years around 2009. And when you scratch the surface on any of these people that are doing this, you usually find somebody somewhere along the line that has these personal memories of what the area used to mean, which is interesting to me. You know, it doesn't always happen, but it often is the case because so many people came through this area and so many memories were made here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember it wasn't too hard when there was the fire at Grossinger's a couple of years ago. It was when I first started at the Times Union. And we put up a story on our website, and someone from Albany who used to be a bellhop, or his uncle was a bellhop family member, he contacted me and was able to share some family history with it. So there are a lot of people who have memories and that these properties mean a lot to, and that's what Keith was talking to me about, too. He's like, it does mean a lot to my family, but he understands that it means a lot to a lot of people's families too. And he kind of hopes that he can do it justice.
And clearly he thinks there's something, you know, to the area. There's still some life in it that would draw people to the area to make use of such a multi-million dollar facility that he plans to build. That's some really interesting news. And Lana, believe it or not, we're not even halfway through our stories. We're almost halfway through the time we got. You mind if we take a quick break and come back and get to these other stories?
Sure, that sounds great.
All right, we'll do that. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, our panel took on the Village People performing their hit YMCA at the inauguration.
They also said that this is the last living member.
Yes.
So it's just why.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for the show that's not so much about why as WTF. This week with special guest musician MXM Tune from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Matt Hurtado. Join me on a journey where pixels meet melodies and controllers become conductors. This is Virtual Soundscapes, the show that transports you to the sonic realms of video game magic. In this journey, we'll uncover the hidden treasures of video game soundtracks from the classics to modern day and speak with industry veterans. Join me every Thursday night at 10 p.m. only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Trump signed this flurry of executive orders touching all kinds of pieces of policy. And if you look at all of these added up together, they very clearly realize Trump's vision: more energy, more gas, more coal, more drilling, more mining, more use of those fossil fuels.
I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
This is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and I'm talking to Lana Bellamy from the Hudson Valley Bureau of the Times Union at timesunion.com. We're going over the latest news. And Lana, we started off talking about, you know, the news that's happened that impacts our region since the new president took office at the beginning of the week. I feel like this one is along similar lines of just a change of politics that are going out there, but there's a sort of trans ban out in Nassau County, and that's been upheld now. Is that true?
Yes. So this is a story from our Capitol Bureau, and Dan Clark has reported that a state Supreme Court justice did uphold that ban. He ruled that banning transgender women from playing women's sports at public facilities is not a clear violation of New York's laws that protect against discrimination based on gender identity. And Nassau's law, it bans transgender athletes and girls and women's sports at county-run properties, which I think is an interesting detail about it. And it's Nassau County is the only county in the state so far that has enacted such a ban.
All right. And anything else that we need to know?
Well, yes. I think that it's going to be interesting watching how Democrats react to this. So, you know, there was a lot of pushback to the judge's decision. A lot of Democratic lawmakers believed that this type of ban was illegal, even though the judge disagreed that that was the case. So they'll now have some time to consider if there's some way that they can legislatively respond to this decision that, you know, will allow for transgender athletes to participate in women's sports. And there is a state attorney general's lawsuit against Nassau County that's pending, but it hasn't been adjudicated yet. So I think there's still a lot to come. The New York Civil Liberties Union also plans to fight the decision. But also, interestingly, we should watch what happens on the federal level, because it's a little bit up in the air as to whether a national ban could just take this out of the state's hands altogether.
Right, which is the sort of thing I was kind of hinting at in the beginning. So that's interesting that there's multiple potential responses in the works here, legislative response, continuing legal responses at the state level, and then the bigger question of the legality of all this and the political side of it, too, at the national level. So thank you for giving us that update there. Now, listener, if you weren't with us last night, you would have missed the story that we had about Evergreen Meadow Academy, but this is a school in Sullivan County in Rock Hill that's trying to help girls recover from trauma they've experienced, and they're going to be getting $2 million from the state. We reported on this last night. Lana, you guys have this story, too. What did you think when you first heard about this?
Well, I thought it was very interesting on multiple fronts. I interviewed the founder, Stacy Millman, for almost an hour. And it was one of those interviews where questions just naturally kept popping up for me. You know, why a middle school? Why is it only for girls? You know, how did you even come up with this idea? Which I'm sure she spoke to you all about how she has a very personal story as well with her daughter about getting into the field and wanting to create services that fill this gap in residential care for young girls in particular in the state. So I thought it was pretty fascinating that the gap that we have, but also just what the school hopes to accomplish for a problem that is pretty specific and not fully addressed yet.
Right, and this is a large amount of money to be going to an institution in Sullivan County, $1.9 million, nearly $2 million. Any idea of, like, and we hear that this is coming from Governor Hochul, her administration at the state level, you know, that's where this grant's coming from. Any indications to what this means for the governor, what the goal is here?
Yes, so Governor Hochul's office, when the governor announced that this funding was coming down for the future Evergreen Meadow Academy, she did mention that it is part of, or it helps support her larger vision of improving mental health access, especially for young people statewide. So her office said that she had committed, you know, to a $1 billion investment last year in improving access to mental health services, and that is continuing in the 2025 budget. There's up to $20 million in what they call startup funding that's available right now for school-based mental health clinics and a rolling application process that makes it easier for interested schools to set up these types of satellites within the state. And the 2025 budget also includes more than $19 million for care for young people outside of school environments. So that would be like community-based treatment and residential care that's not attached to schools.
When we talked to Stacy Millman yesterday, the founder and president of Evergreen Meadow Services, I mean, she's already very much looking forward to their grand opening, was inviting us out to that, and then speculating as to whether or not the governor might come to that opening in Sullivan County. I do not think the governor has been in Sullivan County since she's been governor, but I could be wrong. That's not news. This is me expressing my shoddy memory. But, Lana, you're the reporter. Have you heard anything indicating that Governor Hochul might come to Sullivan County because of Evergreen Meadow Academy?
Well, I mean, Governor Hochul has come down to the Hudson Valley quite a bit, if you ask me, for various things. There's a lot going on down here. I wouldn't be surprised if she does come to the opening for this residential treatment center / academy, because it is pretty rare for this type of combination, and this facility is pretty unique, and enrollment is going to be open to girls statewide. So I wouldn't be surprised.
All right. I guess we'll all just have to wait and see what actually happens, and we will definitely report it for you here on Radio Catskill when it does happen Finally, Lana, before we go tonight, the last story we have, it's a bit of sad news, but it's also, you know, a real good person that we have to remember here. This is about the passing of Garth Hudson, correct?
Yes. Garth Hudson, a legend who was part of legendary band, The Band. He died, but he died in his sleep Tuesday morning at a nursing home in Woodstock, which is considered his adopted hometown. And he really, his electronic organ playing really helped define the band's unique sound. And I think it's also notable for people who don't know, I mean, he was the only non-singer in the band, but he could play almost any instrument, piano, accordion, French horn, sax, pretty much you name it.
Yeah, and, you know, a multi-instrumentalist, a consummate musician, and things that I was pointing out to people when I heard about his passing, and just reminding folks that he was the last surviving member of the band. He was also the eldest member of the band as well. And, yeah, he definitely has a real connection to the Catskills, the famous basement tapes that the band recorded with Bob Dylan, like that happened right there at their house in the Catskills, the Big Pink. But, you know, Garth was the person running the cassette recorder and the recording and making all these things kind of happen behind the scenes. So it was some surprising news to hear. Is there any reaction from the community that you've seen?
I've really just seen an outpouring of, like, respect from people, and, you know, they're sad, but kind of how we're talking about him here, it's been sort of a nice reflection too on all that he's accomplished. And I think it's interesting to note too, that he had last performed in 2023. So he was still, you know, performing around here, and it was in Kingston at the Flower Hill House concert number 6.
Oh, that's great. Well, again, you know, sad news, but also someone worth celebrating. So thank you for bringing that to us. Thank you for bringing all these stories to us. They're all up now at timesunion.com. We've been talking to the Times Union's Lana Bellamy. Lana, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's Garth Hudson himself on his Lowry organ performing a Chest Fever with the band, recorded just down the road at the original 1969 Woodstock Festival in Bethel, New York. And with that, that's the end of the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. I want to thank you so much for being here with me. Come back tomorrow. We'll do it all over again. Patricio Robaya will be your host, and you'll get the latest news from the Shawangunk Journal and Chris Rowley. Till then, stay with us. Coming up at 7, we've got a great music lineup on Thursday nights, starting with Ramble Tamble. But before that, more news from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Never Sink General Store, featuring deli sandwiches, gourmet specials, and catering. TheNeverSinkGeneralStore.com. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering 4 counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
I'm Thane Peterson. Join me for great music from the newest artists with a little bit of classic jazz from the greats of the past thrown into the mix. Living Jazz, Saturday at noon, only on Radio Catskill.
If you know our show, you know selected shorts means strictly short stories, usually. On this week's show, selected shorts also refers to a particularly coveted pair of lederhosen from writer Haruki Murakami. I'm your host, Meg Wolitzer. Join us.
Sunday night at 7.